This is Classic Black Dude Podcast coming live again. We're from Chicago today. Usually we're in Los Angeles at Studio 71 out in Burbank. Today we're on the north side of Chicago, my hometown. Not my home neighborhood. I'm from the south side, as y'all know. I'm your host, Clark Jones, a.k.a. Pod Strickland. We're here on Classic Black Dude with another special guest. My friend, my bro, who I've known for a long time, also from Chicago, comedian, writer, actor. He auditioned for sure. He auditioned for stuff, and he will let you know about it on his social media updates. My man, Dave Hellum.
Yo.
What's up, man?
What's up, bro?
10 years in the game.
For stand-up?
Yeah. First time I met Dave, and this is so funny from carryover from another episode. So we both went to Morehouse College in Atlanta, and if you ever seen the movie School Days, like Alpha Alpha is a big part of it, the fraternity. I was trying to get down. Dave did, I didn't. And this is where I first learned about like networking. Like, I knew Dave was a member of the fraternity I wanted to be a part of. And I knew he was from, I found out he's from Chicago. So I wore my Whitney Young shirt one time because we were in the same stats class. And so I wore my Whitney Young shirt just so he'd be like, are you from Chicago? And I was like, oh, yeah, man. Hey, man, how do I get down?
Did I notice it?
Yeah, you did. Okay, you did. Because somebody had told me, like, man, he loves Chicago. Matter of fact, a mutual friend of ours, told us that, like, yeah, you should holler at Dave. And I was like, well, I ain't just going to walk up to a dude and be, like, starting a conversation.
Like, hey, man.
So I wore my Whitney Young gym shirt just so he could be like.
See, but people got to understand the context of this, though. Like, it was, like, 200 people every year going out for, at max, 25 slots.
Right.
So.
Yeah. It was everything.
It was everything because we're at the HBCU, so it's like, you know, sports ain't shit. So it's like everybody wanted to be in a frat or a sorority. You know what I'm saying?
That was the status. Right next door was Spelman College. A lot of people, if you're not familiar with it, just most beautiful black women in the world.
I would have had no shame. Like if we would have been like roles reversed, I would have been like, hey, man.
But let me ask you this, though, because a lot of the same skills that it takes, and we just jumping right into this. It's got a lot of the same skills it took to have to network and kind of massage egos, right? And make you seem like somebody worth it to be around. You have to use those now in the world of comedy, no?
Absolutely.
Same skills?
The same way I was waiting on people for hours, and then they would never show up. But then there would be somebody just watching me to see if I was going to stay there for those 2 hours. And I didn't leave when I was trying to become an alpha on campus. It's the same stuff when you are going to a show you don't necessarily want to do, but you know people are going to be there looking at you possibly, or even going to an open mic that you don't feel like going to, but you know you got to just work on your shit.
Right.
It's that same level of discipline.
Do you feel like what do you rank your social ability to like network and people like, oh, I fuck with Dave. This comedian, I fuck with Dave.
It has to be a natural thing. I mean, like, you know, it's part of the game, like, going and meeting people. Like, we had our management company, Emmy Brunch, in Santa Monica, California last week.
That's a stunt, by the way, for everybody listening, but keep going. My company had an Emmy Brunch.
Well, here's the thing. I wasn't invited the previous year.
Okay.
Okay, right? So, right. And like, you know, I was kind of I felt a way about that, you know, but I didn't realize that everybody didn't get.
This is your management company.
This is my management company.
Okay.
Right? Everybody didn't get a seat at the table.
Okay.
Right? Because I guess I didn't have enough going on, per se. But, you know, that I was bothered by that in some ways. But then when I got there, and then you see who's there at the table, and everything's free. You know what I'm saying? All the food. And you're like, oh, I know this person from this TV show. I know this person from that TV show. You start rubbing elbows with people talking. It's a good time. But sometimes you talk to people. And you be like, hey, that guy's an asshole, right? Like, I don't care how much I gotta rub elbows with this person. Like, I don't like this person's vibe. Like, I can tell, like, this person's a dick. Like, I don't give a fuck no more. And I'm about to abort the mission.
It seems like most people like you, though. Like, just even in a place like Chicago where, like, you know, it's a city of hella haters and all of that. But, like, it seems like you've, I'm just from somebody who's known you for a long time and just watched and seen that, like, you really approach people humbly, and I think that's your reputation, that, like, you don't have airs, right? Like, I'm the opposite. Motherfuckers, before I even say a word, motherfuckers be already like, oh, he think he better than me. Sometimes I do, because
I just want to remind you of the story when I asked you what your rent was one time, and you told me, I don't do numbers.
I don't. But you know why? You know why? Because that's when motherfuckers are counting your money. And I hated that. And you see, you didn't forget it. But I wasn't intentionally trying to flex. Man.
I was like, this is a nice spot in Hyde Park. I was like, how much do you pay for this? He was like, man, look,
I don't like to talk about it.
I don't do numbers.
I'm very guarded. I'm very guarded with certain things. I just hate talking about money because it's never led to something good, right?
See, I've had not like the opposite experience with that, but it's just one of those things where it's never like bit me in my ass.
It has. It's like motherfuckers will find.
I've never been robbed either, so I don't. I'm not gonna would.
People will play with your money if they think like you doing good, and it happens a lot with people like. But that's our whole business right now. To present things as you're doing this highlight tape on Instagram, on Twitter, on social media, to the secret, the game, where it's like, oh, I'm doing well, so maybe you'll give me some shit too.
I hear that.
Right?
I think the reason that people maybe respond to me in such a way, though, is just for the fact that I'm just like, I'm a firm believer, and I hate to say karma, but like I feel like when you do good shit, like good shit comes to you, like straight up, and that's just kind of like the vibe I try to be on. Sometimes you get angry, sometimes you get bitter about stuff because you know you see people getting shit that you don't get, but for the most part, outside of stuff like that, like I just try to be like you don't want nobody having a reason to not fuck with you on anything, right? Yep. So I just try not to present that in any way, even if I don't care for somebody, I just try to be like, I'm just not gonna talk to this person as opposed to saying I don't like this person, and then that person says it to somebody else, and like, oh, Dave don't like this person. No, fuck that.
Yeah, what a lot of people don't even understand, and I don't know, I can't speak for other industries, but deals are closed while you're not in the room, right? Whether for the favor or against, you know what I mean. So you got to keep your reputation clean. It used to be, it felt like here, you had to keep your reputation clean off being funny, but living in New York and LA now, like, you really got to keep your social reputation. Even if motherfuckers ain't like glowing over you, you don't want people saying like, nah, don't work with him. Mm-hmm. Right. It's paramount to the whole thing. Like, can you take us through getting, cause you writer for Rel, right? Mm-hmm. Network television.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. How did that, Give us the 0 to 60 on getting into a writer's room.
You know what's crazy? Let me just preface all of that by saying that it doesn't feel any different in my day to day. Like,
okay,
like my life is not. Maybe that's why I stay so humble, because I'm always like looking at the next rung on the ladder.
Yeah.
So like I still can't get a credit card right now. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, right? Like, yeah, right.
I'm still getting denied from credit card applications when I'm still dealing with like regular life stuff, right? So it's like,
but there's so many comics that wish they was in Dave Helms' position to have written on a Fox TV show.
It's like that poem "If" though, like you know, like you can't, you like.
What's I was supposed to learn that poem,
but
never did.
It's a line in there that says, if you can meet with triumph and disaster,
and treat those liars the same.
Yeah, those disasters just the same, right? Yeah. So it's kind of like, when I was working on Rel, I was like very excited. But then I looked around, and I realized that I was like the least paid person. I was at the bottom of the totem pole like in that writer's room. And, you know, you have to humble yourself because you have all these ideas.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes I would say stuff, and I remember the first time I was in that room, somebody had pitched an idea, and I was like, that's not funny, right? And
it's an etiquette to the shit. You
unless,
can't just...
unless you have a rebuttal and a counterexample,
right.
Shut the fuck up. Right. So,
did they say that to you? Did somebody tell you?
In so many words, somebody put me to the side and was like,
"Don't
like,
ever do
like,
that
hey,
shit
don't
again.
Ever." Because you know, I was just like, "That's not funny." Like, but they were like, "Well, what would you say?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know." But I just know it ain't funny.
But I know that one funny.
So when I first started, it was a learning process. But once I learned the learning process of like say less, but when you do talk, have something. It meaningful, and also just be a good presence in that room. Like people, let's say people don't think you're an asshole, right? So like, you know, I was talking to Kevin Barnett, you know, and
rest in peace to our good friend Kevin Barnett,
and he basically told me like, man, just chill, like. Like you know,
just chill. Just, you know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't always gotta be saying shit.
Yeah. Just like that. Just basically, like, you know, have a good time, be likable, do your job. But it was something about driving on that lot or riding because I don't have a car, but taking the Uber onto that Fox lot every day. You know, with your badge, and you know, it's a dope feeling. But you gotta stay humble because like, you will start kind of power tripping. Not on people, but just kind of like, how can I say this? Like you just have to realize that shit can come and it can go just like that. Like the same way I was so happy to be riding on rail, that first season came and went and it was over, right?
Right.
So now I'm still going on auditions or interviews, I should say, for riding jobs. And it's kind of like, until you get into, there are certain people who are just kind of in that flow of, they just stay working, like Will. Like Will Miles,
our friend Will Miles,
Chicago guy. Will was in that circle where I won't say like he quote unquote made it or didn't make it, but he's at a point now where Will's just always working, and that's just like the way we all strive to be in this industry.
Here's the thing, though, and once again, on the outside looking in, it's always one thing, but like I play things closer to chess, but like nothing is ever what you think it is. Even with somebody, like people like, man, dream job is SNL. I've not talked to anybody ever who's worked for that show and be like, man, that was the best year of my life. Like nobody's ever said that.
It's a lot of work.
And I can say like, yes, this is an opportunity if you can flip it. But, you know, even whatever job you think is like, man, they got it made. It's never like that. Because they get their money's worth. Whatever that person is paying, that network is paying you, they're getting their money's worth, right?
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like, you talking about 14-hour days.
Yeah.
14-hour days is one thing if you love what you're doing, but imagine a 14-hour day when you don't. And I'm just saying for anybody.
That was the tragic thing about Kevin. You know what I'm saying? Is that, like,
yes,
he didn't get to really rest. And I think that when the show was over, he just needed a mental break from that shit because it was a lot of stuff that we went through on that show. And Gerard talked about it on the Breakfast Club, you know, like the rewrites, and it just all could have been done better in a process so that the people could have their weekends to recharge.
And that's what people got to understand, man. Yeah, Kevin was another one who stayed working. Like, he got job after job, but at the end of the day, he's not with us anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for any industry, and I love to talk about this with another Chicago person about just jealousy, man, like, that'll kill you, and the position, because the hardest thing to do, I think, in comedy is to go backwards. Like, when you think you elevated from doing certain shows, and then you got to go back and do them shows again, so, like, you got to be careful on your elevation side, because you may have to see those.
That's the humility part of that, you know what I'm saying?
Like, and you got to get out in front of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's hard to try to, like, be humble when you have to. Be humble when you don't need to.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, I had got a job writing on Hood Adjacent.
And with James Davis.
With James Davis. And I saw Tony Rock, and we were hanging out. And
who you used to open for.
Yeah, this is about that. this is about that. And, you know, I was like, you know, I even though I'm living here, I said something dumb, like, you know, I still can open for you. And Tony was like, yeah, I know, nigga. Like you ain't made it. Like, right,
but you didn't even mean it in that way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure you weren't like trying to say like,
I'm above this.
That happened one time when we used to host Native Factory out in New York, and it's just like the ego is so sensitive, especially with this business. And like, somebody, we were hosting a show, and a comedian texted me. I won't say their name, but they were like, "How's it looking over there?" And I was like, oh, yeah, it's dope. You know, if you come through, we'll throw you up. And they responded, I know. And I was just like, Well, on the I hear you, but at the same time, like, it's not your show.
Or he didn't, or he or she didn't say like appreciate you. They just said I know.
They just said I know. I think it might have been I know, and of course, of or something to that effect. Something very dismissive of like us being in charge. And so I didn't say anything back. It's just like because it's a hierarchy, man. But you know what I mean?
You mentioned jealousy, and that's something that I think that I was talking to a manager, Nat Goldberg, out in L.A., and I was just like, she runs Unnecessary Evil at the West Side Comedy Theater on Friday nights.
Okay.
Right? And she's just a real cool person, real good person to get in contact with. But we were talking about just keeping your head above water in L.A. Because people in Chicago, I think that's why I like coming home so much, because like it's just we think we know, but we don't. You know what I'm saying? Just like in terms of like Chicago is a bubble, and we live inside, right. and all the shit that like we fought for and fought each other for is just like it just don't even matter. It's just Chicago.
But you think you know until you pop out of it, and
but
then
even
you go
the bubbles we're in now. And like I'm trying to get in, they're going to be bigger bubbles later with the shit that I'm doing in L.A. Like, it's not going to matter. But my point in all this is that like you go out for writing jobs all the time, and you go out for auditions for stuff, and you think you smash this audition, right? And then you don't get it, and I think I was drinking one night. I was drunk one night. And I told Rail, I was like, man, you know, I just been going on these interviews. He was like, man, shut the fuck up.
He didn't want to hear it.
He was like, you getting auditions. I mean, you're getting interviews. You're getting a seat. You're being considered for this job. You know how many people are not getting these opportunities?
That's real. Right?
And I was just like,
What was the interaction? Whatever. You
with
can
what?
Talk about with Sam J, writer for Saturday Night Live.
Oh.
He was at the SNL party.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, that's a big-ass spider right there on that curtain.
That's cool. I'm glad. The spider is a different color than the curtain. So
you can see it.
So I know exactly where it's at all times.
I was about to... Oh, that was very humbling at the SNL party.
SNL after parties are legendary. That's where a lot of other deals and types are made, and you get to mingle and talk and blah, 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 blah. And you were talking to Sam J, who we both know, very talented, very funny. She kind of checked you.
I had an interview for Blackish.
As a writer.
To be a staff writer. And I'm talking, in my mind, I'm just like, this is so, I know she wants to hear all about this shit. She said, nigga, shut, I don't care.
She said, don't give a fuck.
She said, I don't care. She said, we all doing dope shit. We had an SNL after party. Yeah. I'm on fucking SNL. Do you think I care about your Blackish interview? Right?
Interview. And she got the number one writing gig in the country, and you thinking she just gone.
And, you know, and that's my arrogance, thinking that people, and it's not even that she doesn't like me or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know where the spider went.
He's inside.
Oh, okay.
That's George. Don't worry about George.
I'm going to move my book back.
Is that your pet spider?
I mean, he cleans up in here. Gets all the flies and shit.
See,
white people, man.
What? Yeah, that's the difference. We scared. He owns
like,
this motherfucker.
But
yeah.
So, like, you know the spider.
Yeah,
he's cool.
Okay, so he's not gonna bite you or no shit.
No,
like
he's chill. He's chill.
Who the fuck has a? It's not even like a pet spider. It's like, okay,
house spiders are good, man.
They, if you in the basement in Chicago, it's gonna be spiders. You know what I mean? Even upstairs.
This nigga's name is George. Like, okay.
Dave scratching. He,
yeah.
Black.
Back to the story about Sam J, though, man. So Sam J was just like, yo, man, no disrespect. Wait, no, she didn't even say no disrespect. She just said, like, I don't care, Dave.
Yeah.
Like,
did you ever talk to her about that?
I saw her at the Comedy Central thing over this past weekend, because they were all out here for the Emmys or whatever.
Yeah.
And
in L.A.?
In L.A.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was just like, oh, Dave, what up? And I was like, oh, you know, and I didn't even bring it up. I was just like, you know what? I learned from it. I talked to Chris Redd about it.
Oh, okay.
And I said, you know what? I've gotten to a point where I'm done trying to prove myself. And I think that's what it was. I was trying to show Sam that, like,
that you out here working.
Yeah, that I'm out here doing it, right? And I'm just like, you got to find that validation within yourself. and stop trying to show people like, hey, I belong with you all. It's like they gonna see you belong.
They motherfuckers know way more than you think they know.
Right.
And people watch way. All comics do is talk about other comics and what's going on. Right. So she might not have known you had an audition, and she literally, I'm sure, did not care. But you're outside of the house. When motherfuckers just see you out, that's an indication that something's going right, because you were able to leave the house.
I was in fucking New York at the SNL after party, right?
So, yeah.
So maybe I think I was just caught up in that moment of just, who was the chick from she was in La La Land, and she was like the...
White? Black?
White chick. She was like the lead. She was the host.
Emma James?
Of, Emma Stone. she was
I
the
defer
host.
To you?
She was the host of SNL that night. So it was just kind of like...
You speak to her?
No, I didn't know. Like, she had people all around her and stuff like that. Course. But I don't know if you've ever been to one of those after parties, but like it's like circles of sort. It's like, yeah. You know, so
there's the I walked past once the Lorne Michaels was sitting with Paul McCartney, and like that fucking blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, we at this barbecue restaurant, and Lorne Michaels just sitting chatting it up with his close friend Paul McCartney. And I don't really get starstruck, but I've only seen these people on TV. Just to see them chilling like that. I was at the Michael J. Roy Wood Jr. Table, which was fine, you know, but I know them. what I mean? Yeah. Like I've known Roy for a long ass time, and I kind of know Che, but I don't know if anybody really knows him.
I didn't even realize his last name is not Che.
It's
like his middle name. I didn't know that.
I knew that because he drinks a lot. And one time we had a drinking contest, which was my idea. I shouldn't have did it. But I didn't know he was drinking like beer and water in between, because I was just drinking whiskey straight. And I was just laid out. And he put it on his Instagram story, but then he deleted it because that's what he does. I passed out on stage. Because we were at a show, and I was just like, all right, let's drink.
And then he was like, my last name ain't Che?
No. He gave me his card at the bar, and I was just like, oh, okay, Mr. Campbell. We're going to be right back on Classic Black Dude. We got my man Dave Helm. We got so much more to talk about, but we talking about writing. We talking about politics and how to navigate through a system and trying to stay mistake-free out here, man. We'll be right back. Classic Black Dude with your host, Clark Jones, a.k.a. Posh Strickland. Right back.
Hey, I'm Roy.
And I'm Maul.
And we're the hosts of the new Roy and Maul podcast.
That's right.
I know you're probably listening to a podcast that you actually like right now, and we just interrupted it with an ad.
That's all right, we're here.
And I appreciate if you didn't hit the 15-second skip button.
Listen to our show where we cover topics like music, movies,
yes,
TV shows, which we love to binge watch.
Of course. Just lifestyle stuff.
And give out crazy stories about our day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
Check us out on the new Rory Maul podcast. Listen to wherever you get your podcast, and let us know how you're feeling about our show.
And once you're done listening to this podcast that you actually like, maybe you could check us out.
And we're back. Classic Black Dude. Two of them. Two Morehouse Men. Two comedians.
Classic Black Men.
Classic Black Men. Dudes is funny. That's why we went with that. But two dudes who went to college and decided to do comedy. And I know we both started. We didn't even start the origin of how we both started on the south side of Chicago, where I felt like there was some resistance to this wave of dudes who went to college doing comedy.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Because it didn't belong to us. It was like, man, y'all supposed to be.
Go work a 9-to-5.
Go work a 9-to-5.
You got a degree.
You got it better than me. We need comedy. And it was just, did you feel that resistance?
Initially, yeah, like in terms of, but that's when I didn't necessarily know who I was. Like, I mean, this is when I was going by Davey Boy. You know?
Davey Boy Hellum.
Davey
not,
Boy.
Not as a play no, on that, Soulja
this,
Boy
this
Tellum.
Wasn't even, the Hellum part wasn't even involved. It was just Davey Boy. Right. Right.
Your first nickname in comedy sticks with you forever.
And like, it's so terrible because my drunk manager, quote-unquote manager.
Oh, my God. I never forget. Oh, my God. He, I was, first of all, I was kind of new. I was like 2 years in, but I had a good set one time. Somebody was like, hey, can you host my birthday party? And I'm like, all right, cool. And I didn't know. And these motherfuckers was mad. Like, they was like all white party black people are very judgmental of the comedy or the entertainment. So I'm bombing. And then I'm like, well, Dave, it was in the south suburbs, roughly. So I'm like, Dave, just come through. And Dave started coming after me. He had a manager.
was this at the marina?
At the marina.
By the boat?
We on this boat party. And I'm just like, hey, come through. I know he's going to bring his representation. And his representation was like, what did he say? He was like, how much time is he doing? How much is he getting paid?
Yeah, he was like, I'm his manager.
I'm his manager.
But he didn't say it like that. He's like, I'm his manager.
Yeah, I'm his manager. We just want you to know.
I'm his motherfucking manager. Yeah. You need to let Davey Boy do some time.
First of all, I don't care about comedians drinking, but your person talking for you shouldn't be drunker than you. And that's in any business. Like, they should never be drunker. And this dude was lit.
He used to train me. Like,
he must have been drinking in the car, because, like, he came. They walked in.
He probably was.
They stumbled into the party. So Dave ends up going up. Well, I was actually like, no, we can't pay him. And he was like, I don't know. Well, Dave can't go up. And I was like, cool. Because I didn't need more bombing anyway. And so he came back. I think Dave came back. You sent him home or to the car. And then you came back. It was like, hey, excuse him. You know, I'd like to go up and perform. And I was like, all right, cool. So we all ate it, because you can't compete with food either at an event like that.
I don't remember the exact details of that show, but I just remember my drunk manager.
I had 4 minutes of material that I used to do at Jokes and Notes every Wednesday. And so motherfuckers thought, because I had that four, that I could host for a fucking hour, and that was out of the question. No other comics. This was when, like, all the comics still hated me because I was college educated. So,
but,
niggas,
hold on, let's stop for a second. This is the second time in like 3 minutes that you brought this theme.
It was just me. Like,
I didn't feel this from.
Maybe it's my.
Was
it's
it like Southside comics?
It's my insecurity, man. No, niggas really confronted me one time at a show. Shout out to Knowledge Beckham. He used to book shows, and he really used to, like, he was like the first person to pay me to do comedy, even before Jokes and Notes. But he had this room out there, and like, you know, I was new to comedy, so I'm just trying to make black people laugh, right? Like, I didn't know, so I'm whatever. I had one joke about weed, and like four comics came up to me like, yo, that's Double D shit. I'm like, who the fuck is Double D? Like, I didn't know any of these people that they saying that this was their joke. So what I did what I did was, like, I started talking about teaching, right? And Mary, the owner of Jokes and Notes and the booker at the time, she started booking me on shit.
She probably enjoyed those jokes.
She enjoyed it, right? So motherfuckers saw, it's like, it's a copycat business. Mm-hmm. But like, and I don't care, right? But people were very adamant about saying, like, yo, that joke belongs to somebody else, or that person is doing this. When you came and you started talking about teaching, did anybody come to you like, hey man, that's Clark shit?
Mm-mm.
Exactly. Mm. So it was like a double standard that I noticed. And it wasn't you. It was people who weren't even teaching. Started doing teaching jokes. I'm like, bruh.
That was a popular thing for
bruh, a while. Like, I had to do this because niggas was cornering me in Dalton talking about that's so-and-so joke. Or this, you know what I'm saying?
People have no idea. Like, there should really be a documentary about the ins and outs of this shit, like reality TV show called The Comedy Game, where, like, we really just see the pettiness that people.
So,
like,
much happens off stage.
I've heard stories about Deion Cole like getting somebody's face over like.
Well, here's a story, and I hope he don't get mad about us telling it. But there was a story where there was a joke that another comic was telling, and everybody knew that was that comic's joke. Like, it was me doing parking or you with the Biggie story. Yeah. Like, that was their joke, and they didn't have many other jokes. So they had the nerve to confront him. And this is a story. They asked him about the joke.
They asked Deion about the joke.
And he He thought we just stole off of him. Just hit him in the face. Just knocked him out in front of everybody. And I feel like somebody gassed the comic up to ask Dion because they knew what was going to happen. So, like, you got to be careful out here. So, yeah, it's fights. I didn't fuck with nobody woman in comedy because I didn't want that smoke either. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of jealousy. Niggas get mad because this is all we got a lot of times. And there's a lot of niggas in comedy just for the girls.
Oh, yes.
And it's just about pussy. That's the only thing it's about.
And you know,
go ahead, James.
Don't shit where you eat.
Don't fuck where you eat. Don't shit where you eat. And it's like, man, you treat women terribly. Why would you even introduce that? It's so many women who are not comedians who come to shows. Just fuck with them. Why would you want to fuck with?
I've been down that road, you know. Yeah. And
was that a mistake?
It was me and the person who I dated. It was actually. I remember one night. I wanted just some Dave time.
Right.
And
it's important. Personal time is important.
I wanted to go hang out with my boys at a show that was happening, right? But she also was like, I want to come hang out. And I was like, I need some time to myself.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, no, I'm a fucking comic. I'm going to come to the comedy show because I want to see them. These are my friends too, right? And we got to a big thing about that. And I was dumb because, like, if I wanted some personal time to myself, I should have just not gone to that space.
Yeah.
And found like a non-comedy space, but I didn't do that. But it was just like a lot of small things like that that just led us to be like, you know what, we should just be homies.
Yeah,
you know. And
you gotta, I just like waitresses, servers. I never really, I made one mistake with like messing with a booker in Chicago, and it didn't come back to bite me. But then I saw a photo of them talking to another booker, and I'm like, ooh, this is just too messy. Like, I hate to be talked about besides anything except my comedy. Yeah. You know what I mean? But that's a part of the game, man. We mistakes. We make mistakes. We human. But it just can get messy offstage. And I wish it could be documented, but it's so, sometimes it gets so scandalous that nobody would ever let that get out. You know what I mean?
I'm surprised it's not a reality TV show about that. But I think our egos are so big as comics that we think people would like actually want to watch that. They probably wouldn't. So like,
it's just like when motherfuckers be posting about comedy shit and the rest of the world be like, I don't know what the fuck you talking about.
You know, I blame it on graphic designers. Because
wait, me and James are graphic designers?
No, fuck, dude.
No, because it's not just you all, but it's the fact that you had to be somebody at one point to be on a flyer back in the day. Like if you were a comedian,
oh yeah,
like anybody can create whatever. Like they can go download an app and make something that
makes it
seem like they're good when they're terrible.
It's also
right?
the comedy show photographers.
Yeah,
making it look like people are killing. Most time people bombing.
You read the comments. These are from the civilians.
And yes.
Like, man, I'm so proud of you for pursuing your dream. I'm like, this nigga is trash.
He is. That was a guest spot, nigga. That was a.
He is dying. Right
that was
now.
That was a poor guest spot.
Do you see the sweat?
Yeah.
In the photo. Right
do
now?
You? I hate when they take the photo of the crowd and it's on the premise. Yeah, yeah, they take the photo during the premise. Like, no, catch it when they laughing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
let's talk about this though, because like I was talking to our good friend, and he's here in spirit, T Murph.
Yeah,
about content, and he was just telling me that, you know, we should be putting out like at least 10 things a day on social media, which I think is way way too much. But T Murph has a shitload of followers that I don't have, so maybe he's on to something.
You know what? I'll give T Murph credit. I do feel like he made himself, he willed himself into. He took one opportunity. He got the half hour with Kevin Hart, and he really stretched that out.
But he tore a hole in that motherfucker. I was there for the taping, right? And I saw some people were like good, and I saw something. But Murph was like, yo, like he was like, I didn't come to play with y'all.
But I mean, not even the special itself, but took the momentum of it and stretched that into like yo, I'm trying to get to 10,000 followers so I can download, have my shit, you know.
Wait till this TV show come out.
It's
going to be over.
Yeah, his head is, it is fine. I love it because, you know why? I see the work. And I look, Midwestern people, we appreciate and respect work no matter what. It's like he committed to that.
He's about to sell out the Promontory for his monthly show. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
I mean, we used to have that room and we would have good nights. We ain't never sell that motherfucker out. You know what I'm saying? So, like, Murph is doing his damn thing. But he always said, like, you know, you should be posting like 10 pieces of content a day. And this is the struggle. And we're just kind of talking about this like off air, but it's like you just find yourself finding funny memes to put on your shit and your Instagram stories because, like,
that is one. I know some comics who just post it. I mean, they're basically fuck Jerry. They're like the fat Jew. You know what I mean? These are accounts, by the way. before people see, because I just assume people know things and they don't. But those are accounts that were just aggrandizers of they would post memes and not give credit to the comedians, but then, and comedians are getting pissed, but then that's like the easiest way to get your followers up.
And let's be real, it's kind of hard to find the origin of any meme. Like we don't know who created half of the shit. Like, the ones that you see that are funny, like, we don't know where that shit came
from. But these motherfuckers,
it's all Reddit.
But these motherfuckers also sometimes be knowing, but then they're like, oh, the internet is that wins again. It's like, where did y'all come up with this? It's like, you took it from my page. You know what I mean? Like, you took it directly, and I had my, you cropped out my
stamp.
Yeah, you cropped out my stamp. It's like, man, y'all, how do y'all be coming up with this? Who did this? It's like, you cut it out.
And here's the thing, that's, I'm just going to be just my petty self right now, but I think, like, I think it's a format. So it's like all these like shitty talk shows are going on your Instagram. Now, the one I really hate is like when they take the content and then they put like the divider and they just give like their 2 cents on,
like Kev on stage,
like every day. And it's like, first of all, this ain't funny, but like, but,
well, is that now? It used to be the jump cut with the spoken reasons approach. And every time I come on social, there you go again. What y'all trying to? It was like that for like a year. Now it's the split screen.
Was you giving your like commentary on stuff? And I like, for some people come for it, and that's kind of like how they do their shit. What's his name? Ryan Davis. Like he has a huge following on it. To hear more.
Yeah,
like you said, Kev on stage, even.
Yeah,
you know,
they running with that.
LeVar Walker,
good.
You know, people who get the views up. But I guess at the end of the day, like, in order to sell tickets, it is sadly becoming
about
the followers. I mean, we, you know, we're getting older, right? So like,
true.
as in our 30s, like, our demographic, they at home with they goddamn kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they not coming out to these shows that we have all the time. So we got to find younger followers and younger people to, but then you see the greats and they don't worry about shit like that.
Well,
you know?
Look, nobody books, people invest. So maybe at one point in comedy, there was about booking talent and booking people who are funny and we could maybe work their funny into something, but their people are investing in either they're saying, you got all these followers, you'll get our brand out more. The Laugh Factory or whatever.
Or TV show.
Or you're with the same agency as the comic we really want. So we'll book you first and then maybe something will be worked out, you know, with that agent to get Louis or whoever, right? So it's levels to it. But you gotta always make yourself a viable commodity as something to be invested in. And this is why we only put the highlight tape on Instagram, right? Nobody talks about the bad, maybe in the stories, but
see, and that's what I try to do, and in some ways, is try to talk about like the reality of it all. But all that happens is Brian Babylon just ends up posting like under my post, being like, "Shut the fuck up!"
Oh.
Right. So
yeah, right, like something like that.
Yeah,
something
I'm like,
kinda...
I'm trying to be real, or I'm trying to be positive. It's like people don't want to hear the realness, and they damn sure don't want to hear no positivity. Like, you know what?
But as your heat grow, all of a sudden, more things you do become acceptable, right? Like when you follow. Yeah, or it either becomes more acceptable or people talk shit harder. And it's just like I posted about working with the NFL, and I had the one of the Muppets I worked with.
Yeah.
Somebody commented like, oh, we worked with that Muppet on so-and-so. I'm like, what the fuck that got to do with what I posted? Like, what was your intention with that comment?
You're not exclusive. You're not exclusive. We know that puppet.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I worked with that puppet on my show. They ain't make no special puppet for you. And I'm like, it's just petty, yeah. as you mentioned. But you, we both, speaking of Babylon, we you and I both have worked with Hannibal Buress, the great. Mm-hmm. Well, I would put him in this generation definitely top five, and it's a lot of he's influenced. I don't think it would be this many black comics openly talking about comic books and shit like that without his wave.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
I definitely would agree. Like, just that whole observational, like, but the ability to be vulnerable. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I'm trying to think about what comedy was like, like, before Hannibal. And
it is an era, right? That we're like still kind of in.
That Laugh-A-Palooza, Jamie Foxx 2005 type.
Lime green shirts, button downs.
Yeah, like after the Def Comedy Jam era and like the 2000s, where it was just very like hip hop. It was still very hip hop heavy in terms of like black. Like,
yeah.
When I say black, I mean like stereotypical black. Like you gotta have this type of style. You gotta be kind of raunchy. You gotta be animated. And now you got these black comics who are just kind of like, yeah, this is their whole cadence, doing their entire thing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have had that without.
And then a lot of them aren't performing their jokes. But I think his style has gotten blacker as he's progressed. Like, I just think, yeah, at the beginning he's different than he was in 2006, 2007.
Yeah,
but like, hey, I ain't gonna lie. Like, we're from the same city, so we just have a lot of similarities, period. But watching him navigate was like my blueprint in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? So I'm appreciative that, like, even though other people, a chick just came up to me after the show, a white woman was like, oh man, I thought you were Hannibal. I'm just like, what? they said Clark Jones, number one. Clark Jones is on the flyer. But
yeah, it was some wild white women there last night. Like that one married chick that.
And I've warned you. I was like, hey,
I wasn't trying to talk to her.
I know you weren't, but like people, women. I ain't gonna generalize, but women be. She was. I'm like, your husband's right there.
Oh yeah,
that puts me in a terrible position.
I hate when they do that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, or they make you take a picture. And like, and you make the husband take the picture of you and the wife. It's like,
and he mad. He purposely taking a fucked up picture.
Or he should be like any man is just like, man, look at her just having all that fun with that dude.
Yeah, like yo, she kissed me on the face three times. Then she told me, oh, this is my husband.
Oh no,
three times.
I didn't know that. No,
she not on the mouth, but on the face. I'm like, you got to stop doing that, cause I'm single. You know what I'm saying? And you're mildly attractive.
She might have been trying to recruit you.
It might have been on some cuckold shit.
On some who the eyes?
But he looked too pissed, like for him to be like, he don't know it's a cuckold situation. He had to be filled in later, some shit. I don't know, but it was just that's the wild thing about comedy. Like, I don't understand what about making a room full of people laugh makes you think I'm good at sex. You know what I'm saying? Like, what does that turn you on? As a whatever, maybe just the ability to speak in front of people.
That's exactly what it is. I think people are attracted to orators, like whether it's a politician,
public speaking.
Yeah, it's just.
There's a charm to it too.
Absolutely.
Like, I just watched your set. You was at New Negroes, and I mean, you were fucking finessing the fucking crowd, man. It was obvious because there's two things. Like, when I have to record something, I'm being a comedian who's doing stand up, and I'm very set up punchline-y. But like last night, even it was just about being funny and having the swag. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Even off shit that like ain't even that strong of a joke, you sell the fuck out of it.
I think most of comedy is likability. You know what I'm saying? I think that I've realized that. So at that New Negroes that you're talking about, like, I mean, first of all, I came from a day party, and I was definitely day drunk. So I just sat down, and we just had a conversation for 10 minutes.
And they was with you from the beginning.
And then we saw Hannibal in the corner, like the Dark Knight. Just. I was like, why the fuck is Hannibal in the corner?
Yeah. I'm walking out. I just hit, hey, Clark Jones. And I'm like, who is, oh, what's up, man? You just at a show? You watching? Yeah, I'm thinking maybe I might go up. You might go up. You're definitely going up at New Negroes.
Yeah.
We got to take a quick break here on Classic Black Dude. Man, talking about a lot. We're not going to cover everything, but we covering just the game right here on Classic Black Dude. Dave Hallam, we'll be right back. All right, we back on Classic Black Dude, man. We only like really scratched the surface of it. We might have to do a part two in L.A., but this is Chicago version. My Morehouse brother, comedy brother, Dave Hallam, man, just talking about the funny parts of the game, the drama. Our mentors, we both look up to Dion Cole and Hannibal Buress and B. Cole. We didn't even talk about your first mentor, Lil Rel, but Chicago's a city that
I drove a lot of comedians around.
For a
long time.
It was like different cars. It was the Saturn. It was the Malibu.
Yeah. Like, people would give me so much shit for doing those things. But you know what? You talked to me about, we talked about this earlier, about things that you would do. Like we was talking about, like, trying to get online.
Yeah.
And being alpha.
Yeah.
But I've always looked at it like, yeah, I will drive B. Cole or Lil Rel around if it gets me better at my craft, and it also gets me around more people that I want to be around.
But it gave you pushback because so many dudes are caught up in their ego, and they would clown out of almost jealousy, like, I can't be that. They can't be that humble, right? So they were jealous of your humility. Cause if they want to be around, you know, Rel or whoever's popping too, but it's like, it's just you. People let their ego get in the way of a lot of things.
You can't have two alpha males a lot of times. Like, like for instance, like if I'm around, when I was around Rel and I was driving him, I know Rel was Rel. I would just shut the fuck up half the time and just drive. And if he wanted to talk about something, we talk about it. Cause I noticed that when I want to talk about something, he didn't give a fuck about it.
Yeah.
So,
one time I was in the backseat talking too much. I remember that day vividly. And he was, I could just see him getting annoyed, and that was the birth of. I don't think him and I had friction at all, but I do know it. Like, he's one thing I'll say about Rel is, first of all, he's the first person to ever bring me on stage, so I'll always have that debt to him. He's also one of the funniest people.
I mean,
to watch him every Wednesday at Jokes and Notes was just a masterclass, right? But he also has a short memory. So if you say something to him fucked up, he'll forget it. And you like, man, he probably ain't going to like me over that. But then the next time he's like, oh, what's up?
It's all good. Like,
it's all good, yeah.
Like last Thursday at the Bronson Bar, like when we took that, like,
Chicago
We
photo.
Out the World picture of all the black comics from the South Side.
All of Mary's sons together. Yeah, it was cool. And like,
he texted me. He was like, man, I want to come up there and say something. But I didn't. I was like, all right.
You mean like on the mic?
Yeah, he would come up there and just.
Well, I don't know why he wouldn't.
It's fine. I mean, he said don't do it, but I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know the response to this text. Okay.
Yeah, that's another one of them things. I don't know. You never know what's going through the mind of a comic, especially one who has that much under his belt. And he's a parent. Like, people are like, oh, I thought you was a comedian. Don't you always want to go on stage? I'm like, it don't work like that. It's personal feelings. Sometimes you just don't have nothing that you want to say.
Exactly. And if he wanted to, he would have, but he didn't want to.
And that's all good.
Those Wednesdays at Jokes and Notes, like that line, and this is before I started doing comedy, because I didn't know who Rel. I knew I was drinking too much back then.
I remember this. I know this story.
I walked in there and I just started roasting this dude in his haircut. And I
in his vest. And he forgot that.
Yeah, and I was like, who the fuck is that? And they were like, that's Lil Rel. I didn't know who the fuck Lil Rel was. I just saw some weird dude, right? So,
but carrying in that tradition, every Thursday in L.A. at the Bronson Bar, Dave Hellum has a great room. And I love the room because it's... yeah, it's... We got to get out of here. It's
that segue was so terrible.
It was... You know why? Because my energy went up. I just switched. Yeah, it was terrible. It wasn't great age. It was like directly like, oh, they about to wrap up. But it is a great show. I enjoy doing it because it's like... It's black folks. It's a black room. But they understand comedy is a process. Like, they'll like Mark Henderson bomb, but they enjoy themselves because they know that, you know, comedy is a process. They're familiar with it. It wasn't like, oh, fuck this nigga. It was just like,
and plus, how many shows do we go to where it's like, it's non people of color with people of color sprinkled in? Like, yeah. Like my show is like the opposite. It's like so mostly black, brown, mostly black, yeah, with a sprinkle of Caucasity.
Yeah.
Caucasity. Sprinkled on
like it is in this room right now. One white dude, two. The ratio is 2-1, at least, if not greater than that.
It's like an episode of Southside with the producer in the basement.
That's funny.
That shit is so funny, man. I'm just finishing up.
Oh, yeah.
That season.
Damn, we didn't even talk about that much. But yeah, you've been on Southside, Sherman Showcase.
Yeah, doing
your thing with Diallo. Thank God for Diallo and Bashir. They blessing dudes out here and inspiring dudes. And we out in L.A., both of us, every Thursday at Bronson Bar, 9 p.m. with DJ PM, Joey.
Joey stays busy.
Where you at on the, what's your handles?
Oh, it's just my name. Just Dave Hellum, Dave H-E-L-E-M. I learned from them days, man, of having something else.
Just be direct.
Just be, and then have it be the same for all the shit. So that, you know,
absolutely.
If it is different, just have it be the same thing for you aspiring people out there who want to get into the social media game.
I'm at the Clark Jones, T-H-E-E Clark Jones, and the pod is classic black dude on everything. Man, another dope one in the books. Make sure you like, share, comment on YouTube, on anywhere that you get streaming media, you can get classic black dude. We've been another dope one. Make sure you follow both of us, and y'all be good. This be your boy Clark Jones, aka Pod Strickland. Classic black dude.